Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Change Agents Dilemma for Tuesday, January 21st, 2014. I'm your host, Heather Stagel, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, as I do once a month on Blog Talk Radio. This show is one of the many ways I help equip individuals and teams to influence organizational change at Enclaria. Before we get started, I'd like to let you know about a five-part webinar series that starts next week on Wednesday, January 29th, called Design and Influence Irresistible Change. The first topic is define the change, and we're going to figure out how to clarify what really needs to change in order to achieve the desired results in your organization. So start with the basics. What's really changing here? And then we'll also cover topics in future webinars about uncover and reduce resistance, gain leadership support, design and communicate change, and sharpen your influence. So if you're interested in learning more about that and in registering for that, you can go to enclaria.com/events. The Change Agent's Dilemma is how to influence change without authority. And my goal with the show is to share ideas and stories and other concepts just to help you do that. So today my guest is Jennifer Fromm, who is here to discuss the 70% failure rate of change initiatives. Jennifer is the founder of Conversations of Change, where she is an experienced change management practitioner, communications professional, and executive coach. Jennifer combines a range of skills to help companies bring about lasting change in their organizations. She has worked across multiple industries, pharmaceutical, utilities, financial services, manufacturing, retail, and within public, private, and nonprofit sectors, so basically everywhere. Her change projects have included culture change, process change, mergers and acquisitions, and technology system change, so pretty much all types of change. You may know her as one of the founders of the Organizational Change Practitioners Group on LinkedIn, which at this point has about 43,000 members. So if you're on LinkedIn and you're not a part of this group and you're listening to this, you probably should be. That's the Organizational Change Practitioners Group. So Jen, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us all the way from Australia.
Thank you so much, Heather. Really, really delighted to be here.
And what is it, about 6 o'clock in the morning there?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, so I applaud any of the listeners who are super keen from this side of the world, but otherwise I'm imagining we might hear them, or they'll be hearing this later in the day when you post it.
Right. So let's just start with the punchline.
Yes.
So true or false, 70% of change initiatives fail?
Survey says false. So false, it's not funny. So, you know, I think it's such a great attention grabber, isn't it? Like in terms of, you know, how you want to put a report out or a paper or a post or even lead a presentation. It's a magnificent statistic because it really gets people's attention. But what I'm really looking forward to chatting with you about is, you know, how actually dangerous that is to use that statistic when it is absolutely, completely false.
Yes. Whew. So, well, let's just start with, you know, because this, well, maybe it helps to start with the history and, you know, where did the,
yeah.
What are we talking about, the 70% failure rate?
Look, to start with, I guess, you know, the 70% failure rate in of itself is a statement which you could unpack for hours because there are so many elements of that, you know, in terms of, you know, what's actually a change initiative? How does it differ from a project? You know, does it mean that change management is done poorly in general and is responsible for the high failure rate? How are we measuring benefits realization? What does success actually mean? So that actually has, you know, a huge area to unpack within the question. But if we looked at a history, it's actually a really fascinating story because it tells us so much about how we come to believe something is true and tells us very little about our change practice. So, you know, it appears that the statistics started back in about 1993 with Hammer and Champy's Reengineering the Organization. Classic book, really, really popular. And, you know, the book talked about business process reengineering initiatives in the and this was, you know, pretty much what a lot of our attention was focused on at that time from a change management perspective. And the book contained a lot of success stories and case studies of particular companies that, you know, had gone through BPR. But what really resonated was this statement that came from the book, which was, you know, sadly, we must report that despite the success stories described in previous chapters, many companies that begin reengineering don't succeed at it. Our unscientific estimate is that as many as 50% to 70% of the organisations that undertake a reengineering effort do not achieve the dramatic results they intended. So that's kind of where it started, a little throwaway line about an unscientific estimate as to,
wow,
to what happened. Yeah, yeah. And when statements like that come out in books that are bestsellers, it's very difficult to challenge that kind of normative statement, and particularly from people who are, you know, really, really top of their field professors and CEOs. So, you know, it sort of builds from there. In 95, John Cotter publishes the article Leading Change, which again has sparked so much of our interest in change, and particularly at an executive level, because that has the eight steps to leading change in it. And he's really circumspect around success and failure in change in that article. So, you know, he says that he's observed over 100 companies with varying success rates. He actually doesn't say anything about 70% in there, but he is widely attributed to be one of the sources of this 70% failure rate. So, you know, it starts to gain momentum because you've got some really, really big hitters here being attributed to this statement as an empirical scientific fact. Beer and Naraya in Cracking the Code of Change in 2000, again in the Harvard Business Review. If you want something to go viral, then you get it in the Harvard Business Review. And, you know, their article is about their work on Theory O and Theory E of Change. A really good, good stuff. But they've got a sentence in there which says, the brutal fact is that about 70% of all change initiatives fail. So there's absolutely nothing to support that in that piece of work. There's no reference to those kind of studies or anything that they would get that fact from. It's just tend to have built and built and built. And, you know, I call it a bit of an academic matryoshka, you know, the Russian dolls that are inside each other and you keep pulling one out and there's another one. Because it gets
right
to the point where today you look at something like the McKinsey reports, the Irrational Side of Change and the Inconvenient Truth, which again widely cited, and you unpack them and it's like you're pulling the Russian dolls out, because the more you get into those articles, they all lead back to the initial Hammer and Champney piece.
Wow.
I don't have so much
interest. Pretty quickly
It
pretty quickly became legend, really.
Oh, it really did. And there's a really interesting clue. So there's an academic called Mark Hughes who has done a piece of work which is about looking at how this myth has spread. And what he identified is that Hammer in particular saw really fast that this statistic had taken purchase. So he said back in 1995, unfortunately, this simple descriptive observation has been widely misrepresented and transmogrified and distorted into a normative statement. There is no inherent success or failure rate for reengineering. But it's kind of like the horse had bolted at that stage.
Right, and there, you know, I go to presentations all the time around town or, you know, even at conferences, and you hear people talk about it all the time. And not to say anything bad about anyone who's said it, because I myself have used it in presentations, accepting it as a fact.
Look, I think we all have at some stage, we've used a variation of it, right? It's a very sexy statement. And particularly
right.
when you work in consulting space, it actually, you know, it can be a helpful statement if used well. But I would argue, now that I've sort of seen it and how it's being used and what's going on, I actually think it's one of the most dangerous statistics we could have out there in our field of practice of change management.
Sure. We'll talk about that. What's dangerous about it?
Well, I think, you know, it's dangerous for a couple of reasons. One, what it does is it starts to normalize failure of change. So think about it from an individual level. If you're struggling with bringing in change or managing change, or you're a change leader or a change agent, and you're finding that things are really, really getting quite difficult, and, you know, this is not unusual, right? Our work is highly complex. It's often fraught with challenges. But this statistic gives us an easy out. It says, you know, well, if I'm not managing this change so well, it's okay, I'm in good company. 70% of change fails. So it takes away the impetus for us to actually look at our work and how can we improve our practice. You know, it says that this is really normal. I think the other thing, the danger in it is it probably, you know, from it creates this this emphasis for selling our consulting work based on fear. And what you have is, you know, you'll have particularly your very big consulting firms come in, and certainly they're the ones who often have authored a lot of these reports, which use that as the headline. And the story is, you know, you should be very worried. 70% of change initiatives fail. Lucky for you, we're experienced enough to know how to get you into 30%. But what we understand from executive decision making is that the fear, you know, the flight, freeze, fight impulse is very, very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're using fear as a motivator or a sales technique, it's very easy for your client to completely freak out and, you know, either go into paralysis, well, I'm just not going to worry about this for the moment because the risk is so high, or go, well, look, what's the point of us spending money on you? The likelihood is it's going to fail anyway. We're just going to muscle through this, and then, of course, it's to the detriment of to the people within the organisation. So I think there's some real danger in using that as a normative statement to sell change management into organisations.
Sure. And I'm curious to know if there's a benefit to knowing what the real number is. You know, if it may be 70%. We don't really know for sure. But would there be any value to actually knowing what the failure rate of change is, do you think?
I'm going to say yes and no. And I think what I'm thinking about with this, there's two things. One, as you yourself have said in, you know, you started off the posts on this, change is a discovery process.
Yes.
And you're so spot on. So the concept of actually trying to measure repeated studies over a period of time, assuming a static concept, when we know full well that it's not static, renders the results kind of meaningless to us. So at its most, you know, and so being able to make a statement about how much percent of change actually succeeds is of limited, it's just too clumsy and too general to be useful to us. However, what is incredibly useful to us is actually seeking to measure change success and unpacking that concept of what does success look like within change. You know, the metrics that we do need to be keeping, because this isn't to throw out the statistic and don't worry about measurement, far from it. It's let's stop measuring a binary construct, change success, as yes or no, which is effectively what's being done in these studies. So they ask a bunch of leaders, which say, were you successful in this initiative, yes or no? where there is utility is actually opening up a conversation around what success looks like and what metrics are really important to us in change.
Sure. Well, and with that, you know, pass or fail mentality, you know, it's everything short of success is a failure. Well, really?
Well,
because even if we moved in the right direction, isn't that better than zero?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know about you, but if you look at your career and your clients, you know, I'm pretty sure you're not going to tell me that 70% of them have been a failure. And I recognize we've got some self-interest in this. But I think all of us as practitioners can look at initiatives where we go, okay, were benefits fully realized? Probably not. In some initiatives, it exceeded benefits in terms of what we expected. Other initiatives changed so much during the process of what we came in to do that the benefits were no longer realistic or likely for what we were doing. There's a whole stack of things to look at, and yeah, I don't know that neither you nor I or any of my peers are just so special that we're in that 30%.
Sure. Well, and I'm trying to remember who it is that said the quote, you know, if you really want to understand something, try to change it. Was it Edgar Schein or was it somebody else? But you don't, you know, really that you don't fully understand something until you try to change it, that especially organizations that are full of people, that you can try to be, you know, try to foresee everything that could possibly happen and predict, yeah, we'll be able to finish this project in 2 years and we'll have these benefits and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm. But then you start to change it and say, wait a minute, I didn't expect that to happen, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And some of this can also be great opportunities emerge that you want to capitalize and take advantage of. So it's not all a, you know, this isn't going to succeed because we've got, you know, we're going pear-shaped or there's this problem or this reason. It's simply that, you know, we're in a hyper-connected world now and opportunities emerge so fast that sometimes the large scale of our transformation projects are not relevant within the 2 to 3 year time that we're currently, you know, scoping for these initiatives to run.
Sure.
What we might have said success looked like at the beginning changes really fast with that. But, you know, I think it raises this question around how do we measure success in change and what are the change metrics we should be actually measuring. And I think it actually raises a fantastic opportunity of stakeholder engagement. And I think there's two things that I see in change metrics when it comes around to, you know, how do we measure that something's successful in change. And that is we often, not only do we look at binary measures, which I'm saying are not the way to go, but we look at when do we actually measure success? Now, I'm a big fan of measuring at different phases in the change project. And that looks like at this stage, so at 4 weeks past inception, what does success look like from a change management perspective? And I'm looking at what does change success look like in terms of what we're changing, but also how are we changing? And that's probably more important to me because if we're doing a poor job of implementing change, that's going to impact on what we're changing ultimately. So being able to capture metrics throughout the stage, so at 2 weeks prior to go live, what will change success look like? At go live, what does change success look like? At 4 weeks later, you know, 3 months later, what does success look like as you transition over to a, you know, business as usual environment? It's not easy to do, but once you actually open up those conversations with your stakeholders, you're in such a better position because you can actually have conversations which is around educating and managing expectations. I don't know, you know, how do you normally go about that process, Heather? Is that an explicit conversation you have up front?
About managing expectations?
Yeah, around success rate?
Part of, I wouldn't say about success rates. Or even, well, going back to that, you know, did it succeed or not succeed, but defining what does success look like and are we moving in that direction and how will we know? What are we going to measure to tell if we're moving that way?
Yeah, and it's often a really difficult conversation. I remember I had one executive that when I started that conversation, I said, okay, so tell me what success looks like for you with regards to this change. And he said, well, there'll be no noise when you go live. And I said, well, what does no noise mean? And he said, well, people won't be talking about it and they won't be frustrated and they'll just be able to get on with their job. And that was a great answer because we know how incredibly unlikely that is to be, but it opened up a conversation which is around what are the trade-offs we're prepared to make in terms of noise versus performance versus, you know, what's he willing to spend to lower the noise?
Yeah.
But, you know, keeping in mind that no noise is actually not on the table at this point, you know, it becomes negotiation. And when every time you do that, you actually, you upskill the executives in their understanding of change. And they go into the next piece more knowledgeable around what's likely to happen and how it can occur. And I think that's a really, really valuable conversation to have. It's not just about the initiative you're working on at the time, but you're building the change capability in the organization.
Yeah, I like that approach.
I think there's, I was going to say, there's a really big, you know, if there's any of the research students listening into this at the moment, there's such a fertile space for researchers in this area. And the nice thing is you're 20 years on from the original statements, right? So it probably is about time that you can start poking sticks at those who have been gurus in the space. From a political perspective, you're not going to do it in the couple of years past from an academic career. It's just not going to happen. But you've got space now when you can start to say, well, look, 20 years on, do we think differently about this? And we've seen a few research pieces come out. There was a fabulous meta-analysis done last year. So a group of researchers, I think they were in Denmark, I think, did a meta-analysis, which is one of those really big studies where they collect all of the studies that have ever been done on a topic and compare and contrast to work out, you know, let's get back to what is the actual success rate of change. And their study found, they looked at 536, I think, or 563 different published studies on change success. And their summary was that the way the research was done was so poor internally in terms of what they were seeking to research was you can't make any sort of statement around success rate of change. So this opens up a really big opportunity for academics and researchers to get in and look at this and look at the internal validity of research studies. And, you know, that's particularly exciting for practitioners because for this to work, they need to engage with practitioners to understand change success. And so I think we've got some really big opportunities at the moment to start building knowledge both academically and look at that bridge between academic and practice in the space of change success.
And maybe stop trying to measure yes or no, did it succeed or fail, but actually looking at how well was it implemented, how much noise.
Yeah.
Right? or something like that.
And what can we learn from that? You know, I think there's some interesting opinions on this out in the blog space and stuff like that. So Daryl Connor has got a really interesting piece which effectively uses the statistic to beat change practitioners up and say that we are partially, if not fully, culpable for that 70% failure rate and we need to lift our game. And that's a very general, you know, interpretation of that, but that's how it's been interpreted by a lot of the field. Now, I disagree with what he's saying, but if you then read into those posts in terms of what change practitioners can do to improve their practice and improve success on change, it's wonderful. It's absolute gold. It's a must-go-to. You've got to read it. I think when we had Jason Little blogged on this topic just shortly before I did, and he said at the beginning of his post that there were 3.5 million hits on the phrase 70% failure rate. Now, I checked last night, there's 8.5 million, and that's in the space of, you know, just under a year. But what's really interesting is when you look at the first couple of pages, it's kind of 50-50 on those who are saying, this is a myth, stop talking about it, and those that are saying, taking it as read. So I think that's a really positive shift. This is a conversation that started to occur, which can only lead to how do we improve our capability in change and how do we actually improve success in change.
Sure. Okay, so for the most part, we're using it to gain attention, like in general in society.
Yep.
And it's not really useful otherwise.
No.
Is what we're saying.
that summarized it well.
So then, as change practitioners, what can we do to stop perpetuating this myth?
Look, I think what we can do is gracefully challenge and treat it as a no, you're wrong. Treat it as an opening to a much richer conversation. As change practitioners, we can gather our peers locally. You know, get out your black books, get all the change practitioners that you know, meet up for a series of evenings where you actually discuss what change success looks like and success rates, and thrash out this question and talk. You know, share how do you measure success and what does it look like. And that starts to inform our practice at a community level rather than just, you know, and give us some support with how we deal with organisations on this. So I say, in short, it's gracefully challenge when people bring it out. Go back through your presentation decks. If you've got it in your presentation deck, you know, think about, is there a better way I can get this point across? And we've started to see some, you know, some companies and studies which are now linking return on investment with change with financial return. I think that's a much more powerful statement to be using in your power decks is, let's look at it from a positive perspective. If you have good change management, here's how much better you're going to do as an organisation. And there are the reports and the research out there which can start to make those alignments and make our life easier in selling change.
Great. So even as a community, if we start to talk about what is it that we really should be measuring, then together we can start to actually measure it. Because there's so many of us who have change projects we're working on and develop something that would be more meaningful. That'd be great.
Oh, absolutely. This is incredibly doable, right? And it's exciting because this will create a step change in our practice and for organizations. Rather than seeing the statistic and shrinking in fear, actually getting out there and having a really rich, nuanced conversation around success in change and how can we improve it.
Great. Yeah, it's kind of empowering. It's not so dire.
No.
It's not so hard to actually do this if you just do the right things. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
So where can we go for more information about this?
Right. Well, so I've done a blog post on it, which will have links to meta-analysis. So that's at conversationsofchange.com.au. As I said before, if you Google the topic, you're going to find there's a lot more out there has been in the past. And I actually think the blogosphere is the place to go at the moment, because when you see the McKinsey reports and the IBM reports and all of the big company reports, they're not telling you what the base research is, if there has been any, that informs those reports. So there's limited utility about that. But I think you're starting to see a lot more nuanced conversations in discussion groups. So, you know, you mentioned the Organisational Change Practitioners group in your introduction. There's a number of discussions, excuse me, around change success there. But, you know, start your own. If you're on LinkedIn, put it up as a status update and see what people come back to you. I think that this is really going to be about creating the conversations to create understanding more so than going to a definitive source of, you know, what this is about.
Right. And if anyone has any studies they know of or other research that has some kind of number put to success rate or anything else around success of change, we'd love to hear it either on Jen's blog, my blog, the LinkedIn group, or even on Blog Talk Radio if you're listening there, anywhere where there's a comment box on this topic, we'd love to hear what those are if we missed something.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that's the caveat to all of this. I'm really happy to be educated and corrected. If there is something that has been done that has strong internal validity in its research design and face validity, it is what it says to be measuring.
Great. Jen, thanks so much for joining the show.
My pleasure. It's been fun.
And coming up next month on February 18th, Dottie Pasto will share how to design breakthrough change communication. Thank you so much for listening to the Change Agent's Dilemma. If you'd like to find more resources to help you influence change in your organization, including individual coaching, team workshops, and upcoming webinars like the one I mentioned at the top of the show, please visit inclaria.com. While you're there, I invite you to sign up for my monthly newsletter. Not only will you receive helpful tips, but when you subscribe, you will also receive a free chapter from my change management toolkit, The Irresistible Change Guide. Until next time, take care and best wishes for your change initiative.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong Trash Bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head-to-head. So you'll be...
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty! Yeah.